Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. I would like to advise you that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will be in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's call. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Stephen Boren. Thank you so much. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Hi, my name is Dr. Steve Boren. I am one of the medical directors here at National Government Services. And I really appreciate all our speakers coming and giving, reviewing articles and giving their opinions. You know, with like Medicaid and a lot of private insurance companies, the physicians don't have any voice in any decisions that are made. We give physicians a voice. We do listen. We might not always agree, but at least we listen, which is, to me, as a physician, very important. So again, I'm very glad that we have these speakers. They all were chosen because of the expertise in this area. What is going to happen is I will read, there are 10 questions, I will read and ask the lead subject matter expert for his or her response, and then I will ask the other subject expert experts if they have anything to add on. This would last roughly about 7 minutes for each question. Thank you very much. Stephanie, do we have the next slide? Okay. Thank you. It's a little small. Fortunately for me, I have one bigger Word document. Okay, the first question is to Dr. Bloomstein, and before I ask Dr. Bloomstein to speak, I will ask him, you know, to introduce himself and to acknowledge any possible conflicts. But the first question for him would be, how confident are you that there's adequate published evidence that intra-articular hyaluronan shoulder injections for osteoarthritis improves health, outcomes, symptom status, and functional abilities? Are you ready, Dr. Bloomstein?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Boren. So my name is Howard Blumstein. I'm a rheumatologist in practice in Long Island in an 11-person group. I've been practicing for almost 18 years. I'm the managing partner for my practice. I've also served on various committees, including right now at the American College of Rheumatology, and I was formerly the State Society President for the New York State Rheumatology Society. And I have no conflicts of interest related to this topic. So my answer I rated it a 4. So I do feel that there is adequate clinical evidence that hyaluronans improve health outcomes, ameliorate symptoms, and improve functions in patients with osteoarthritis of the glenohumeral joint. While there are certainly other effective modalities that may be effective for short-term relief, the differentiation appears particularly evident past the 4 to 6 week mark, and also would likely carry lower risk compared with some of the other alternatives. In terms of supporting literature, I'll briefly review, you know, the bibliography that we were presented with. So, and I'm going to focus on just a few of the details of some of the papers. So, the McKee trial just looked at a single dose hyaluronan, and it was looking at shoulder pain on movement over 6 months study period, and did achieve its primary outcome, along with statistically significant improvements in shoulder pain at night, as well as patient global assessment. Wheel's paper was a smaller trial looking at 27 patients, and they were each patient received 3 weeks of high molecular weight hyaluronate, and again achieved the desired or the expected outcome with statistical significance. And additionally, there was improved pain both on the visual analog scale and the WOMAC score, range of motion, stiffness, and physical functioning score. In Aduaz's paper, they looked at a younger population, so these were individuals that were 55 or less than 55. In importantly, again, in the patients that had moderate to severe glenohumeral joint osteoarthritis, there was significant improvement in their desired, their outcome measure with the Oxford shoulder score, and persisted up to 12 weeks after the injection, with improvement lasting up to 26 weeks in the more severe cases. Importantly, they did note that the patients that had very mild OA did not see the statistically significant changes. So we had a predilection for improvement in the more severe cases. DG Acoma's study looked at 78 patients, and this was a study looking at physiotherapy compared with physiotherapy plus HA, and patients that received the HA treatment plus physiotherapy did have more significant improvements, and again, statistically significant statistical significance was achieved. Blaine said he was a little bit better in terms of the number of patients. So they had 660 patients. They had a variety of conditions, though. So some had glenohumeral osteoarthritis, which is my question's focus. Some had frozen shoulders. Some had rotator cuff tear. All had failed conventional therapy. And this was a double-blinded randomized study. So they either received five injections of the study agents, three injections followed by two injections of a phosphate buffered saline solution, or five injections of the saline solution. Their main outcome was 13 weeks improvement of shoulder pain on movement. It did not achieve statistical significance at 13 weeks. However, importantly, in most of the active arms, so in week seven, the five-injection hyaluronate group did achieve significant differences. At week 17, both the three- and five-injection group achieved statistical significance. And week 26, there was improvement in the three-injection series. So when you look at the stratified population, especially with patients that had osteoarthritis, they did see a treatment effect. And it's in cases of patients that did not have osteoarthritis, they did not see a significant difference in either regimen, whether it was three or five injections. Finally, in Zhang's paper, which was a meta-analysis, again, they did see improvement in treatment arms in all of the studies that they looked at. However, and importantly, there was an effect seen in control groups as well. And this is probably the point that I would gather from all of these studies, that studying pain is very hard. So placebo responses, you know, I think that this is borne out in many of rheumatologic literature, don't always indicate that a treatment is ineffective. Pain in general is a complex and subjective and heterogeneous experience. There's also very, reliable variations, natural fluctuations that we have in symptoms. That impacts on the interpretability of any intervention, because a placebo response will be confounded by the natural history of the condition. Additionally, I think that one has to consider the motivation of the participants in these studies. So in the case of a patient that has end-stage osteoarthritis of the shoulder, they're looking at this treatment or possibly surgery. So most of these individuals are going to be particularly motivated to feel better no matter what is done. And finally, I think, there is some a decent body of literature talking about the intensity of placebo response based on the aggressiveness or invasiveness of an intervention. So I think were this a pill, we may not see the same impact. But once you start sticking needles in patients, then there's a higher likelihood that people would feel better. But that doesn't, I think, negate the positive impact. So that's my answer for the first question.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Does anyone else have any comments to make about this? Okay. Thank you very much. Now to the second question, which is also for Dr. Blumstein. How confident are you that there's adequate published evidence that intra-articular hyaluronate shoulder injections for arthritis improves health outcomes, symptom status, and functional abilities that's effective and well-tolerated in the treatment of osteoarthritis and persistent shoulder pain that is refractory to other non-standard, non-operative interventions.
So for this, I rated it a 5, and the reason why it's a little bit stronger is because I focus on the second part of the question. So the first question really refers to efficacy of the treatment, and I really do feel that this question focuses more on the tolerability of the treatment as well as the indication or appropriateness for patients that have had pain that's refractory to standard non-operative interventions. So the general consensus of all of the papers that we reviewed discusses tolerability, and the consensus was that these, you know, treatments are extremely well tolerated. With, you know, their tolerability has always been cited as high with minimal adverse outcomes and no serious adverse events, at least in these studies, related to the treatments. There were dropouts, for example, in the paper that looked at the large number, the 660, there were, I believe they ended up analyzing 456 patients. There were dropouts, but it wasn't for adverse events. It was for failure or worsening of the condition, or in some cases, patients were enrolled in the study as an interim measure and then suddenly had their surgery dates expedited. So I think that we can't see it as the same thing as, you know, intolerability of the treatment, but rather just, you know, these were patients that were at the end of the line. They were trying to do anything to avoid a surgery, but they also knew that they probably would be getting surgery. As far as entry criteria, most of the studies require that the patients have failed other non-operative interventions and conventional therapy. So I think that that applies and would, again, you know, conform with my answer.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Does anyone else have any comments on this question? Okay, nothing to add? Okay. The next expert will be Dr. Portugal, who will be asked if at least intermediate confidence, greater or equal to 3, is noted in questions 1 or 2. How confident are you that there is sufficient published evidence that the use of intra-articular hyaluronate shoulder injection should be limited to 1 injection for a 6-month duration? So thank you very much. Dr. Portugal, wanting to hear your opinions on this, and also we need you to mention any possible conflicts of interest.
Sure. Hi, my name is Salvador Portugal. I'm an interventional spine and sports medicine physiatrist at NYU. I've been in clinical practice since 2012. I serve as the sports medicine fellowship program director here within the Department of Rehabilitation. I'm also the current president of the New York Society of Physical Medicine Rehabilitation. Regarding conflicts of interest, I did serve on an advisory panel for Hymovis for HA use in the knee, but I am not currently serving as an advisor for them, so no current conflict of interest. To answer the question regarding if at least intermediate confidence of equal or greater than 3, and I'm in agreement with Dr. Blumstein that I feel as though there is a good amount of evidence to suggest that HA is appropriate for the use of glenohumeral joint osteoarthritis. In answering 1 and 2, do I feel there is sufficient evidence for the use of HA injection should be limited to 1 injection for a 6-month duration or not? So to specify, I think that just to be clear that there are certain formulations, as we all know, of HA, which may be 1 injection or up to 5 injections. And in the available evidence that we have reviewing osteoarthritis for the shoulder as well as for other joints is that there is no agreed or varying formulations have been used. So I would not limit to 1 injection, but I would say to 1 treatment within 6 months, given the fact that in most of these studies, there has been a duration of effect anywhere from 3 to 6 months and even beyond 6 months. So I think it is reasonable to limit to one treatment to 6 months, but I don't necessarily feel it should be one injection specifically, as some of these formulations are anywhere from 1 to 5 injections.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any other comments about this question?
This is Dr. Blumstein. I would just concur with Dr. Portugal with regard to, you know, one treatment course. Of course, I would not recommend, you know, doing it more frequently than that. And I also think, given that we don't have great comparative studies, 1 versus 3 versus 5, in one of the papers that we looked at, we did see that there was an earlier treatment response with the 5 series as opposed to 3. So there may be some benefit to longer courses for certain patients, but I would not limit it to one injection. I think that that would be, you know, compromising our Medicare population.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay. The next expert is Dr. Bush Joseph. The first question we're going to ask him is number 4. How confident are you that there's adequate published evidence that HA is an effective treatment option in patients with moderate to severe glenohumeral joint osteoarthritis as a means to avoid / delay arthroplasty? Also, before you speak, Dr. Bush Joseph, if you could just introduce yourself and mention any potential conflicts of interest.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Chuck Bush Joseph. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm a professor of orthopedic surgery at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. I've been in practice for over 34 years. I currently sit on the board of the AOSSM, or the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine, and I'm the chair of the AOSSM Publishing Committee, which oversees its family of journals. I'm also the representative of the Illinois Association of Orthopedic Surgeons, and I have no conflicts at all on this topic. So with regard to question number 4, am I confident about the adequate published evidence that hyaluronate is an effective treatment option for patients with moderate to severe glenohumeral arthritis as a means to avoid or delay surgery? I think there's no evidence for that, and I believe the answer to that is 1. I believe that, as in other joints, as noted by Dr. Portugal and Dr. Blumstein, that the primary indication for these medications is really in symptomatic control. There's no evidence, I believe, in any joint there where it's provided or led to a significant delay in treatment on the basis of the structural properties of the disease. I would comment that, you know, Dr. Blumstein did a wonderful job of describing the several studies, and there are very few in this area that are of high quality in dealing with the use of hyaluronate in the shoulder for primarily for arthritis. I will, you know, comment on the two, if you just the paucity of the amount of literature would suggest the weakness of the evidence. The meta-analysis review by Mao et al. Did have the largest largest series of patients. It essentially had 504 patients, which is the largest collection, even though it only represented 7 studies, of which 2 of those studies had variations in outcome measurements and short-term duration. All of the studies, the longest duration of follow-up was 6 months, and the majority of them were shorter than 6 months. And then if I reviewed the 2 papers from the orthopedic literature, the Zhang et al., which is the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery in 2019, and the earlier study from Dr. Portugal's institution, senior author Joe Zuckerman from 2013, really just found reasonable safety, I think is alluded above, but really no clear lasting benefit, no clear lasting demonstration of efficacy. In effect, the 2019 study, the senior author Mo Khan, who I'm very familiar with and is a high-quality researcher and publisher, notes that there's strong concerns that any indications of relief of symptoms are based on the placebo effect and the intention to treat, I think, as Dr. Blumstein appropriately pointed out. So in response to question number 4, I'm going to say it's a 1.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? Not? We'll go on to question number 5.
The only question. I was just wondering if you're familiar with the work that was done by Banneru at Boston at Tufts, because he's published in the past, not necessarily about shoulder, but about knee osteoarthritis, and he has had a number of papers that discuss, you know, delay of, let's say, knee arthroplasty, and it wasn't poor quality literature, and I, if you want, I could certainly forward, you know, some of the references to you.
You know, I would certainly be happy to look at it, but I was just speaking directly about the shoulder itself. I am a, just from my clinical practice, I am a regular user and believer of hyaluronates in the knee and weight-bearing joints. But just, you know, again, this is just anecdotal personal experience. I discontinued the use of it, and I also surveyed the senior member, the board members of the Shoulder and Elbow Society, ASES, or American Shoulder and Elbow Society, before this meeting, and none of the senior, none of the current leadership use it in their algorithm. Now, again, this is an orthopedic surgery bias as opposed to a physiatry or rheumatology bias, but this is the information that I have.
Yep. Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll go to number five. How confident you are that there is adequate published evidence that intra-articular injection of hyaluronan with physical therapy is more effective than physical therapy alone in patients who have glenohumeral arthritis? I had a three on that, and I believe the evidence is intermediate. I believe that Dr. Blumstein quoted a couple of the articles earlier that did show benefit with hyaluronate, again, in relatively short-term time frames, but I believe the evidence is reasonable. And in my, again, clinical experience, patients who really are placed into a physical therapy protocol with isolated, uncontrolled pain do very poorly. And so the comparators are using, whether it be steroids or hyaluronates, as providing symptomatic pain relief. Certainly in my clinical experience, I believe that to be the case. I don't believe the evidence for it is of high confidence, however, based on the studies that we've mentioned before. I did not, the more recent study from Tufts, I'm not familiar with. So I'll stop at that on number five.
Thank you. Does anyone have any other comments?
Sorry, this is Dr. Chang. I agree with Dr. Butcher-Joseph's comments. You know, definitely in terms of pain control, as Dr. Blumstein sort of alluded before, you know, definitely it's going to comprehensive approach, especially for patients that want to avoid, you know, surgical options. So, you know, the signs of structural disease, again, we try to modify in terms of activity and as well as to make sure that they, you know, accompany that. It's just not one single treatment. Again, it's a multidisciplinary approach in terms of approaching these patients. So I agree, although the literature is not as robust and sort of heterogeneous, especially in terms of the types of hyaluronic acid formulations, I there are a few studies that Dr. Lindsay mentioned that synergistic effect with the, you know, a targeted physical therapy program working on rotator cuff and scapular stabilization as well as the postural strength in addition to an injection treatment would allow patients at least to have some kind of improved function and quality of life.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. The next question.
This is Dr. Bush-Joseph again. I'll go on to number six. How confident are you that there is adequate published evidence that supports the intra-articular hyaluron injection to improve pain for function with glenohumeral joint arthritis? I'm going to give that a four. Again, this is the same literature. We're really discussing the same measures. And I do believe that certainly the papers that we've discussed so far have shown reasonable pain improvement, albeit over short durations in patients. I believe in many patients they get symptomatic relief from an arthritic flare. And whether it's from stabilization of the synovium, I believe that's the primary source, and certainly in the knee, the orthopedic bias is that the majority of orthopedic surgeons use high molecular weight hyalurons, and we believe it to be much more effective. Again, the literature here in the shoulder is, in my mind, not definitive, but I rate it this as a four.
Thank you very much. Anyone else add on to this? Okay. Well, thank you very much, then. Dr. Chang is next. And he will respond to number seven. How confident are you that there's adequate published evidence that the subacromial bursa injection of HA with steroid in patients with periarticular shoulder disorder improves function of the affective shoulder, including range of motion. Please introduce yourself, Dr. Chang, and also state whether you have any conflicts of interest or not.
Sure thing. Dr. Boren, again, it's a pleasure and honor to speak with you all today. My name is Rich Chang. I'm a sports and spine physiatrist and also in New York at the Icahn School of Medicine in Mount Sinai. I'm the Associate Program Director for the Primary Care Sports Medicine Fellowship in the Department of Rehabilitation and Human Performance. I'm also a team physician for the local Division III City College here, Meg Evers College, as well as serve as a medical consultant and sideline physician for USA Fencing, USA Boxing, and professional combat sports with the New York State Athletic Commission. In terms of conflict interest, and in terms of hyaluronic acid, I did publish a study which I was a co-investigator comparing low molecular weight hyaluronic acid with leukocyte poor platelet-rich plasma for glenohumeral osteoarthritis, which was published in the Clinical Journal of Sports Medicine in November 2022. So I'm happy to help answer this question, question seven. So I would say intuitively, with the use of hyaluronic acid with respect to rotator cuff tendinopathy or shoulder impingement syndrome, at first glance, it was somewhat surprising. But based on existing literature, there is a number of, I would say, smaller studies, a number of randomized control studies looking at its efficacy in terms of pain control, function, and disability. So one of them I did send more recently, which was a last study published last year by Mahebi et al. In the Journal of Annals of Pharmacotherapy in 2021. And that was a triple-blind randomized control study looking at high versus low molecular weight hyaluronic acid for rotator cuff tendinopathy. The N wasn't that large. It was about 60 patients. There was 30 patients in each group. And patients had to be included with rotator cuff tendinopathy and had to have MRI imaging confirming no evidence of rotator cuff tears or calcific tendinopathy. Patients were randomized to either actually a single injection dose of either a low molecular weight hyaluronic acid, which was 500 to 700 kilodaltons, or high molecular weight hyaluronic acid, which was greater than 2,000 kilodaltons. And patients were followed for range of motion, pain, in terms of the DASH scores, from 1 month, three months, and 6 months. Here they did show significant improvement in terms of pain and range of motion in both groups. I was in between groups, there wasn't much difference, and there wasn't really any adverse outcomes. There are smaller studies. I mean, there was one study on the bibliography, the last one, citation 13, the Yoon study, which was looking at a two-arms trial, randomized control trial, looking at ultrasound-guided subacromial burst injections of hyaluronic acid versus hyaluronic acid with corticosteroid or triamcinolone. That was a smaller study, only 13 patients in each group. Both groups did improve, but the hyaluronic acid group appeared to have a longer duration effect of up to 3 months. When you look at more previous studies, there was one study in 2013 done by Mahakten et al., and that had a smaller sample size of 40 patients. And there they actually compared once for 3 weeks, hyaluronic acid compared to placebo or normal saline injected in the subacromial space, and there was improvements as well with range of motion, pain, and disability. There are other studies such as Marola in 2013, Maloney in 2008, that showed similar sort of outcomes. Again, the mechanism is not quite understood, given that hyaluronic acid seems to be, we think it's more of a lubricant, but according to the basic science research, there are some evidence in both basic animal studies and in human studies, actually, in vivo labs, that it seems to have some kind of effect, or a disease-modifying on tendons and decreasing expression of type 3 collagen, also some wound healing effects in terms of decreasing abnormal angiogenesis in tendons, and some effect in terms of inflammation, in terms of decreased promotion of pro-inflammatory radicals and a cytokine. So in terms of my overall answer, I would say if we were to give it, I would give it between a 3 and 4. I would give it 3.5 in terms of, while I agree that the studies are small, it is safe, and you know, to the next question, number eight, I feel that it would be an option, especially with patients in our older Medicare population where in the orthopedic surgical literature, I think we're trying to stay away from corticosteroids. And if we are having limited options, hyaluronic acid to the supplemental space would be a viable option for our patients, and I would be safe. But I, you know, and that will lead me to question eight about the disadvantages or pitfalls.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any comments concerning this question or what Dr. Chang said? Okay, then let's go on to question number eight, which is also going to be addressed by Dr. Chang. How confident are you that further randomized controlled trials are not necessary to evaluate the efficacy of hyaluronan's injection for shoulder and to identify optimal dose and route of administration?
So, great question. It's so, somewhat of a trick question. So I'll first answer before I give the score that you know, I feel that further randomized controlled trials and studies are much needed, especially for the use of hyaluronic acid in rotator cuff tendinopathy. And that, you know, there isn't really any one study that I see that has compared it to, again, our current standard of care is corticosteroid, or obviously in some instances, some physicians have started to use injectable non-steroid anti-inflammatory drugs such as Ketrolac as an alternative to avoid the potential detrimental effects for rotator cuff tendinopathy or post-surgical shoulders. You know, I would say in terms of a score out of five, I would give, you know, in terms of it's not necessary, I would say it is necessary. So I would give it, like in the middle of the road a three. So I mean, I feel that, you know, definitely more studies are needed, especially with the current standard of care. It does seem promising. But again, it would have to be with larger N sample sizes and to a standard current group. And again, just to allude back to Dr. Bloomstein's comment about when we conduct these pain studies, again, even every placebo group has a type of a potential treatment response. So, you know, even with saline. So, yes, that's my answer.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wants to comment on question number eight?
I just want to comment about the difficulty of doing the studies. On top of the pain and all of the other things that were mentioned before, it's also just the nature of the material and getting an appropriate placebo. So giving someone a placebo visco injection, especially in a double-blinded fashion, is even more difficult because most of us, you know, are, if we're conducting the study, we'll probably be the assessor also, and you can usually tell the difference between a, you know, viscous material that you're injecting and something that goes in much, you know, it will be the burden of the companies, of course, to come up with an acceptable placebo that can mimic the viscosity, you know, to truly blind effectively. But that's another area that can confound the interpretability of the studies.
Thank you very much. Any further comments about this?
This is Chuck Bush Joseph. I would just say that I concur, you know, that yeah, these studies are almost impossible to do in a completely blinded fashion. But certainly, you know, if we go back to the, you know, the Kwan and Zuckerman study from 2013 with phosphate buffer, you know, you're at least removing bias from the patient about what they're receiving, what they're not. And I think what, as you know, Dr. Chang said, we just need some more numbers. You know, we're citing small cases. You know, the largest series was 40. You know, most of these are, you know, very small anecdotal cohorts that are really difficult to make judgments on. And, you know, there's two perspectives here. There's the medical, number one, of safety. I think everybody's feeling safe about this is a procedure. The efficacy, we're having some confidence to some degree, some higher than others. But the third side of this is, say, efficacy or value and a value of the expense or the value to what we're performing. I don't think we have any literature that provides a value calculation for Medicare or CMS.
Thank you. The next two questions, number 9 and number 10, are also from Dr. Portugal. Number 9 is, how confident are you that there's adequate published evidence that intra-articular HA injections for treatment of patients with frozen shoulder or adhesive capsulitis are safe and effective?
So within the bibliography provided, there was a systematic review and meta-analysis of the available literature, which was essentially a reproduction of an article that was done in 2016. Given the lack of evidence or lack of studies that evaluate this, and what they look at are a number of studies from 1998 to 2021, and there's a total of 7 of them. Of small numbers, the largest of one being having 160 patients and generally a heterogeneous population, in terms of the fact that adhesive capsulitis, the response is going to be dependent on the staging of when a patient is, what to expect in terms of are they in the freezing, thawing, or frozen stages, which is not well defined within these studies. In addition to that, the treatment or the controls are all very different in terms of one group. One study is comparing HA to NSAIDs, another study comparing HA to corticosteroid, another saying HA plus hydrodistension versus steroid, HA versus plus PT versus PT alone, HA versus triamcin alone, PT stretching, HA plus steroid versus PT plus steroid, corticosteroid versus HA versus corticosteroid plus HA plus saline. In the study overall, it found that there was very little difference in outcomes with regards to pain. However, there's a slight improvement in external rotation. However, not much of a difference in terms of abduction or flexion, which we mostly find to be the most limiting in terms of activities of daily living. So in terms of confidence that there's adequate published evidence that the use of HA for adhesive capsulitis is effective, I give that maybe a 2. In terms of safety, in what's been reported is there's no significant difference in adverse outcomes compared to the standard treatment, as mentioned.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Does anyone else have anything to add to what Dr. Portugal said? Okay. Then let's go on to question number 10. How confident are you that there is adequate published evidence that is generalizable to the Medicare patient population? And before Dr. Portugal answers that, I would like to mention that CMS has on their websites, and it's kind of hard to navigate through their websites, but it can be done, that about maybe 3 years ago, 17% of all Medicare beneficiaries were under 65, and then last year, I think the figure had dropped out to 15. The last figure I've seen is 12%, even though I am not sure that that is a true valid number, because I believe that was only for traditional Medicare and excluded people on Medicare Advantage. So I don't know. I'm trying to find another site. So I'm just bring it up that there are a number of people who are under 65 who are, you know, on Medicare for a number of different reasons. There are those people. Now, Dr. Portugal, could you answer the questions, please?
Yes. So as it pertains to osteoarthritis is largely thought to be a condition, a degenerative condition associated with aging, but not necessarily so. Osteoarthritis is much more common in patients over the age of 65, and patients that are in these studies can be under the age of 65, but given the fact that this entity of osteoarthritis mostly affects patients of the Medicare population, I feel like this is generalizable to the Medicare patient population.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else have anything to add to what Dr. Portugal said?
This is Dr. Chang. I definitely agree that it's generally, I agree the literature is somewhat heterogeneous, but definitely applicable to the Medicare population, especially, you know, the populations can be more active, and, you know, given the topic that we're discussing, you know, patients may not be great surgical candidates, or they may have comorbidities that may prevent them from using, for example, corticosteroids like diabetes. So, you know, while, you know, a number of the evidence is not the best or robust, I would say that having options of use of maybe expanded use of Hyrax and maybe to, for example, correct carcinoma will allow us to maybe keep us in pace with the international community. Of course, we can continue the debate, but if we have other options besides corticosteroid or NSAIDs, or, you know, telling patients to wait for surgery, then, you know, I feel it would definitely be appropriate. And or coming from the sports medicine side, for athlete, you know, for patients above the age of 35 or Matthews athlete, again, this injectable medicine may be an option to perform while they're in season, without the fear, for example, like in tendons, like a tendon rupture, which is, you know, anecdotal based on basic signs, or fear for the degeneration, you know, if they need eventual surgery or on the joint. So that's my view on the, in terms of applicability to the Medicare population, or and potentially, you know, with a younger population, since you mentioned there's some patients below the age of 65.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cheng. Anyone else have any comments?
This is Bush Joseph again. I would support Dr. Cheng. I've taken care of professional athletes for 20 years and Division I athletes for almost 30 years, and we use hyaluronics very commonly in the lower extremity, and obviously patients well below Medicare age. But I do believe that the literature is supportive, and the majority of the literature really is aimed at Medicare-based patients, either those on Medicare disability secondary to diabetes or other significant comorbidities. And so the last point is, I think, what Dr. Blumstein noted earlier. Again, these things never occur in isolation, and we'll never have the perfect evidence because these conditions are so confounded in so many ways. And I do believe that there's wide use and adoption in other lower extremities with value. And there is some value in the upper extremity, but I'm still skeptical as to the literature support of it. So.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments in general?
I'll add one more comment.
Okay.
One thing that I think that every panel member can agree on is that if a patient did not respond, so this wasn't one of the questions, but I do, I would just throw this out there. You know, again, all of us, I think, in our respective specialties realize that we are stewards of, you know, the healthcare system and Medicare in particular in today's call. And there is, you know, so one of the questions dealt with how many shots or, you know, whether one shot would be adequate. But I would say that, you know, one guideline that you could, you know, certainly get endorsed by most people is that if a person doesn't respond, it shouldn't be continued. I know it goes without saying, but there are entities out there that exist just to provide visco supplementation regardless of the outcome. But, you know, if someone has a response, then that's one thing. And, you know, most of us, you know, we appropriately did left all of the comments to our, you know, review of the literature, but, you know, all of us have had positive experiences, and, you know, you have patients that respond, and you repeat it because it does afford them improved quality of life. But, you know, I just consider that, you know, that's a reasonable guideline, you know, where if a person has, you know, no improvement, you don't just switch to the next drug, into the next drug, into the next drug, you know. So that's it.
Thank you. Okay, any other comments?
Last comment from Dr. Cheng. So I guess from a cost perspective, just alluding to Dr. Regarding cost, I would say, you know, given hyaluronic acid, you know, there's different formulations, different companies make it. I would say if CMS does consider expanding its use besides the joint, I would continue in terms of making sure that it's evidence-based and that, you know, for example, patients have to try physical therapy or standardized supervised exercise program. for at least 4 to 6 weeks in, you know, oral medications before they try these injectable treatments in order to reduce any sort of any potential misuse or fraud. So, again, I'm sort of excited by the potential promise of, you know, based on what we've discussed today. But, again, from a cost perspective, you know, we're in the U.S., and we have a very diverse patient population. So, again, if Medicare is thinking about guidelines, I think that's something that to bear in mind.
Thank you very much. One thing I will add here that many people don't know, that contractors cannot, and there's seven of us contractors, NGS or Elevance is either the largest or second largest, depending on which day of the week it is, sort of like the difference who's richer, Bill Gates or the Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett, matters which day of the week. But contractors are not allowed to use a cost as a reason for not covering or for covering any treatment. And related, even though there's a lot of people who don't believe this, Medicare contractors do not get any savings from, turning down claims or anything like that. The only way it really affects us is as a taxpayer. But I'm just bringing it out since cost has been brought up. Linda, we would like to have everyone who spoke to give their a number on each thing. How do they go about doing that?
Hi, this is Linda. I sent you all an email with the questionnaire on. If you could fill it out and send it back to me, we would greatly appreciate that. And I will send it out again today, just in case
you
can't find it, okay?
Thank you. And again, I want to thank everyone who participated in this because, as I said at the beginning, we want to get people's opinions on things. We want you to have a voice in Medicare. We will listen to you. We might not always agree with you, but we will listen to you. And as I said before, I don't know too many other places in healthcare that you have a voice, but you have a voice with us. So thank you all very much, and we appreciate all your help. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for letting me participate. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That will conclude today's conference, and we thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.